We have come for the darshan of Sri Yamuna Mahi at the holy place Keshi Ghat. Kamsa sent the monstrous demon Keshi to Vrindavan. Actually, time and again, Kamsa was sending tremendous, powerful, mystic demons who could assume incredible forms and create utter terror. And each time Gopal would effortlessly send them to the abode of death. He began when he was only about two, three days old. When the great Khetri Rakshasi Putana came to Gokul Mahava. Each time Kamsa was receiving this news, he became more and more and more desperate. Keshi, formidable demon. Really, really extraordinary, assumed the form of a gigantic horse. He was galloping into Vrindavan with the speed of mind. The Bhagavatam declares he was galloping with the speed of mind. There was no racehorse in history that could compete with this. And he was so huge. As he was galloping and galloping and galloping so fast, he was literally with his hooves tearing up the earth. His size was so immense, the mane or the hair on his neck was scattering the clouds and was even scattering the airplanes of the demigods. He was neighing. He was roaring with the voice of a horse in such loud, hideous sound that sound vibration of his screaming terrified everyone. The earth was shaking. When Krishna saw that all the Brijabasis were utterly terrified by the presence of Keshi, running into Vrindavan, searching for Krishna. Krishna personally appeared before him. When Keshi saw him, he roared. Immensely he roared. And he opened his gaping mouth and ran right toward Krishna. His mouth was so wide, it appeared that he was about to swallow the entire universe. He ran toward Krishna with his front legs. He tried to pulverize the soft body of the Lord. But Krishna dodged all of his front legs trying to stampede him. And Krishna grabbed his legs and whirled him around and threw him 100 bow lengths, which means 600 feet. And Keshi fell to the ground unconscious. Shri Krishna Bhagavan ki! When Keshi came back to consciousness, he was more angry than ever. In a state of utter fury, his eyes just blazing with rage, opened his mouth as wide as it could be and ran toward Krishna. With his mouth opened, Krishna stood before him and smiled. Then Krishna laughed and said to Keshi, "Oh, you want something to eat?" And he showed Krishna his left thumb. Krishna showed him his left thumb. He said, "You want something to eat? Here, eat this." And then Krishna thrust his left arm in Keshi's mouth. Now this was horrible. Can you imagine what Maharaj Parikshit was going through listening to this story? Krishna's arm is soft, like the stem of a blue lotus flower. And Keshi's mouth was terrible. It was like death personified, and his teeth were terrible. Krishna thrust his arm into Keshi's mouth the same way a snake enters into a hole to kill a mouse. Keshi closed his mouth with his ferocious teeth to bite Krishna's arm. As soon as Keshi's teeth touched Krishna's lotus-like arm, all his teeth were uprooted and fell to the ground. Then Krishna's arm began to expand into bigger and bigger and bigger proportions. It is explained that for the devotees, Krishna's arm was as soft and cool as the stem of a lotus flower. But for Keshi, it was hot and it was hard as a thunderbolt. Just as if a person has jaundice, the eating of sweet sugar candy tastes very, very bitter. Because of Keshi's demoniac diseased mentality, he was experiencing Krishna, his lotus-like arm, which would embrace the gopis. He experienced that arm as the personification of pain and death. The arm expanded and expanded and expanded until it completely blocked all Keshi's ability to breathe. He suffocated. His eyes bulged out. He flipped over. He just kicked all of his four legs violently. He profusely perspired. He passed immense quantities of stool. And then he died. And his body just broke open like an overripe piece of melon. Krishna effortlessly, with a beautiful smile on his face, extracted his arm from the mouth of the dead demon. The amazing thing is how Krishna did this in so effortless way and free of any sense of pride for having killed Keshi without even any effort. He accepted the worship of the demigods as they showered fragrant flowers from the Nandana garden of the heavenly world of Swarga upon Krishna. The Keshi demon represents, please listen carefully, especially you senior devotees. The Keshi demon represents the vanity, the false ego of thinking, "I am an advanced devotee. I am an advanced devotee. Even people look at me like a guru." That mentality is the demon Keshi. Hare Krishna. It destroys our spiritual life. Keshi also represents the sense of ego, thinking oneself to be very important, arising from attachment for having a lot of wealth, and even doing great achievements in the service of Krishna. If we become proud of our achievements in Krishna's service, that is another serious anartha, which corrupts our devotional service. Oftentimes we speak of the story of Kurukshetra, when Krishna gave the leper Vasudev, who was suffering so horribly, he gave him special mercy. Vasudev's body, that was covered from head to feet with living worms, his entire form was decaying. Therefore, he was ostracized from civilization. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu embraced him and gave him a perfectly healthy, effulgent, beautiful body. And Vasudev prayed, "Please, protect me, Lord, protect me from becoming proud. I have received your special mercy. How will I be free of pride now that I have received such a unique blessing?" When there is pride in the heart, Krishna no longer takes pleasure in anything we do. Dharmasya hipaparagyasya nartata yopakalpate. It is described in the Bhagavatam that whatever we gain through our execution of devotional service, we should never use them for our own sense gratification. We should never think, "I am the doer," or "this is mine." Janasya moho yamaham nameti. These are the two basic imprisoning forms that keep us within material bondage, is the conception of I and mine. And Maya is so strong that even as we execute devotional service, this false ego can corrupt us. When we chant the holy names, when we follow regulative principles, when we preach fearlessly, when we develop shakti as a reciprocation for our efforts, that's a blessing of God. But as soon as we feel proud of that, as soon as we think that I'm better than others, now look at me, I am advanced. Usually we find the big problems in any spiritual society is not so much the junior devotees. Usually think that they're junior because nobody respects them too much. Yes? When you first come, nobody respects you too much unless you're very wealthy or powerful or something like that. But as you make advancement, if you just stay around for a while, people are going to start respecting you just because you've been around. Yes? You have nothing else. Just carry on chanting, and soon, you know, so many people are going to die off and you're going to be considered a great soul. What to speak if you actually accomplish great things? You open temples, or you cook nice offerings, or you worship the deities beautifully, or you have so many people who are following you. Maya can use that good fortune, that benediction, to destroy your spiritual life. Because to the degree we're spiritually advanced, we realize, I'm not advanced. Look at the prayers of the great souls. Thakur Narottam, he's not saying, I am advanced. See how many hundreds and thousands of disciples I have. Read all the beautiful prayers and songs I have made. No, he's considering himself the most fallen. Hari Hari Vipale Janamagonahino. He's declaring himself to just be burning in the fire of material existence. Praying for mercy, praying for help. That is advancement. Thakur Bhaktivinoda. What is his prayers? O Gopinath, I am a servant of lust. I'm shackled by material desires. Please save me. I'm full of pride. The sufferings of others are my happiness. And the happiness of others is my suffering. Now how can someone who is Paradukaduki speak like this? Because his heart is so pure, so humble. Because he loves Krishna. And the classic expression of humility of Kaviraj Goswami. Amongst all the Goswamis of Vrindavan Dham, they all commissioned him to write the biography and the philosophy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Raghunath Das Goswami, Lokanath Goswami, Bhugarbha Goswami, Jiva Goswami, Gopal Bhatt Goswami. Such acharyas, intimate, personal associates of Lord Chaitanya. But they selected him to write because of his incredible scholarship and spiritual advancement. And yet as he's writing, he's revealing his heart. I'm lower than the worm in stool. How many people can honestly say that? I'm lower than the worm in stool. I remember years ago when Sri Krishna Chaitanya was giving me Panchakarma, and there's something called Virechan. And I'm not going to go into too many details, but one day I looked down after responding to nature's loud call, and there was a gigantic worm. And you know where the worm was. And I was looking, and at first I was thinking, that was inside of me? And then I tried to think more philosophically that Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is considered himself lower than that. I can't possibly think like that. This is beyond human ability. It's a completely divine state of total humility. Only can be exhibited by one who's in the presence of God. I'm lower than the worm in stool. I'm more fallen than Jagai and Madhai. If anyone hears my name, they lose their piety. If anyone speaks my name, they become sinful. That is Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, as he's writing Chaitanya Charitamrita. That is the heart of a Vaishnava. That is advancement. Advancement doesn't mean simply great achievements. Advancement is a state of love. So yes, Keshi represents the mad horse, the all-devouring horse of death. in the form of the thought that I am an advanced devotee. The pride that just see what I have achieved. We must pray to Krishna to save us from this demon. By sincerely trying to please him in the mood of the servant of the servant of his servants, by absorbing our heart in hearing his glories, by following in the footsteps of the great souls, and by really taking shelter helplessly of chanting the holy name. Eternally flows in the eternal spiritual world of Goloka. Yamuna is not a river of this world. We have spoken today how Srimati Radharani told Lord Sri Krishna that I will not feel happiness anywhere where there is not the river Yamuna, the forest of Vrindavan, and Govardhan Hill. So Yamuna Mai, who is actually an expansion of Vishakha, one of the two most confidential maidservants of Srimati Radharani. In fact, Vishakha Devi is an expansion of Radharani herself. To enhance the pleasure of Krishna's pastime, she expands herself as the river Yamuna. She appeared in this world as the daughter of Surya and the sister of Yamaraj. And Yamaraj is very affectionate to his sister. So anyone she blesses, Yamaraj will not disturb that person. So Yamuna is descending from the spiritual world, Krishna Loka. And she is coming to this world of Yamunotri and flowing to meet Mother Ganga at Prayag. Jiva Goswami quotes from the Shastras how the river Ganges is the Charanamrit of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And there are so many narrations declaring the glories of Mother Ganga. But if you multiply the power of purification of bathing in the Ganges 100 times, that is the effect of bathing in Yamuna. Yamuna is eternally participating in the Lord's Leela. Srila Prabhupada explains the night, midnight, when Krishna appeared in the prison of Kamsa in Mathura as the son of Vasudeva and Devaki. Krishna ordered Vasudeva, bring me to Gokul Mahavan and exchange me with the daughter of Yashoda and Nanda. So Vasudev brought the newborn infant baby, Gopal, and he had to cross River Yamuna. And as he was crossing, Yamuna's desire to serve him was so great that Krishna, in his infant form, reciprocated and slipped right out of the hands of Vasudev and fell right into the waters of Yamuna, where that ambrosial nectar of her love in the form of her water bathed Krishna. Yes, it was Yamuna who supplies water to Krishna's calves and his cows, and the place where Krishna and his gopas would perform the most beautiful pastimes of taking prasad on her banks. For the pleasure of Krishna, Yamuna's water was sweeter than the sweetest of all nectar. It was ambrosial. Always perfect temperature, perfect taste, perfect everything for the pleasure of Krishna and his devotees. And during Ras Lila, Krishna would perform his beautiful dance with Sri Radharani and gopis on bank of Yamuna. Chaitanya Charitamrita describes beautiful pastimes of their water sports in Yamuna. All together. So yes, the Yamuna is the eternal Charanamrit of Sri Sri Radha Krishna, the gopas and the gopis. And when we bathe in Yamuna, we are bathing in that nectar. And most of all, it is her love, Yamuna Mai's love, that consists the water. Therefore, bathing in Yamuna is one of the most important aspects of worshipping the holy land of Vrindavan. There are three supremely powerful offerings that Vrindavan is giving to the devotee. Her dust, the water of Yamuna, and the hill Govardhan. By worshipping these three, one can gain unlimited purification. So at this time, with gratitude and sincere spirit of devotion and prayer, we will board boats, and Brijabasis will bring us across the river, and there we will take holy bath in Yamuna. Do not consider so much what people put in Yamuna. It's there, no doubt. There are some open sewage systems just pouring in Yamuna, and people do so many things in Yamuna. But that's not Yamuna. Just like our Prabhupada said, originally our consciousness is Krishna consciousness. But there's so many pollutions, so many sewage trenches that are coming into our consciousness. Yes? So many desires that just pollute our consciousness. But our consciousness is pure. This is really not our consciousness. The chanting of the holy names filters our consciousness and removes that which is not our consciousness, and brings, like Prabhupada says, like filtering water and taking away its contaminations, then the substance of the pure water is there. Prema Pumartha Mahan, the ultimate goal is to love God. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sadhya Kabunoi Saravanadi Sudhichiti Koryaidoi. Love of God is within our hearts. We simply have to remove everything else so that that love can shine to illuminate the world and give pleasure to the Lord. So Yamuna is Yamuna, whatever anyone puts in. No one can contaminate Yamuna. What's not Yamuna may be contaminated. But what's Yamuna cannot be contaminated. So when we bathe in Yamuna, we are bathing in the essence, not of the sewage, but of the Yamuna. That sweet nectarine rasa of her love. And the Charanamrita of Radha and Krishna and the Brijavasis and the Charan Namrit of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nityananda Prabhu, Advaita Prabhu, the six Goswamis, and all the Acharyas. It's all there. It's not that it flows down the stream and goes into the ocean. It is eternally present, the Charanamrit of all the great souls. Prabhupada said, when one has faith, even bathing in Ganga, even if he sees some stool floating, he'll just push it away and drink the water. So, with great love and faith, let us all bathe in the holy river Yamuna, the ambrosial nectar that has descended from the spiritual world, for the special purpose of purifying our hearts and awakening unconditional, unmotivated, loving service of the inhabitants of Vrindavan. Sri Yamuna Mayi Ki Jai. Thank you very much. After bathing in Yamuna in boats, we will return to Fogla Ashram for prasad. Now, there are several alternatives. Those of you who would like to walk back the same way we came from, it's not as long because Fogla Ashram is a little closer. We can walk back along Yamuna. Those of you who are a little older, we have 5 vehicles or cars that can drive you back. And those who simply would like to go back a different way, you can just enter into the town of Vrindavan, which is just here, and find rickshaws, and we'll meet you for prasad. Now let us take our holy bath. Thank you very much.